Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Good evening. Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. And we got a hell of a show for you tonight. When you look at Legacy Fighting Championships, or Alliance, I should say, as they did transition, there's a young man that caught my eye back in Branson named Cassius Cain. And I'll tell you what, you know, there isn't very many fighters that catch my eye. And him and one other fighter from that card caught my eye tonight, and they're both on the show tonight. But without further ado, I'd like to bring on the one and only Cassius Cain. Cassius, what's happening, my brother?
Not much. How you doing, Don?
Oh, just struggling, man, struggling, fighting with. Well, you know what's weird is, and I know it's way off topic, I went back and because I've been trying to figure out this link issue. So I went back and I looked at it, and then it let me do it right before the show. So it even made me that much more mad. You know, it's like, it's just one of them days. But we got you on here now. You know, before we get into the fight world, there's some tremendous news that happened for you recently. You posted it on social media. You're going to be having a little boy. What does it mean for you to have a little mini you out there? Are you going to take him the sport aspect, or are you just going to let him decide as he grows up?
Oh, man, it's a very surreal feeling. I'm not really sure yet. I think I'm just going to let him do whatever he wants. You know, if he wants to play band or whatever, I guess, you know. but it's a really cool experience. Me and my girlfriend have a great support system and family system around us. Everybody's been really supportive, so it's been really cool. Very great experience.
Yeah, I like that. In the video, you can see all the love and support that was there, and that's tremendous. You know, you've kind of built that up in the fight world. You know, every once in a while, I'm kind of a little bit of an elephant in the room, but you got to understand there's a meaning behind it. You know, you look at the fight with Derek Krantz, you were taught a lesson in that fight. You had to dig deep in your heart, and you had to learn a little bit. But then you came back, and, you know, now you got an opportunity with Kalen Bourne. What did you feel that you needed to change from your last outing to go into this next outing that's going to help you come out with the victory, brother?
Well, man, that Krantz fight, man, that was tough.
I think it could have went either way.
Yeah, honestly, I felt that I thought I had enough to win that fight, but I don't think, you know, like, I think they counted that slip that when I slipped to kick him in the head, I slipped, and I think they counted that as a takedown for him or something. I'm not sure how that went, but it was just a really close fight, and there's just a couple big moments in that fight where I did a couple things that if I could go back and change it, would have made all the big difference, you know. So looking back at that, I guess I would just, as a fighter, you know, you gotta learn. Each fight is a learning experience in its own. So learning from that fight, I just learned to kind of slow down a little bit and be more precise with my shots and just, like, let the fight come to me instead of looking for that one knockout, you know, kind of open up my opponent more to in the, you know, with the body shots and the head will follow kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I was at that fight, and I got to it had me at the edge, you know, edge of the apron all night long, and I was standing up. I was, you know, it was one fight that, you know, could arguably have been a fight for you. You know, you talked to Emmanuel, E.J. Brooks, and, you know, he said the same thing about your fight. You know, if it would have went either way, there ain't nobody could have said anything. And I really feel that way about you. But I also think that this fight with Kalen Bourne is a tremendous opportunity. I think it's a fight that is designed for you in the way you are in the cage. Would you say that's a fair assumption?
Oh, yeah, man. That's why I was kind of looking at this. You know, I look at every guy that I fight, kind of, like, what can they gain from this fight? So he's an up and coming guy. He's undefeated. So he's trying to make a name, but I think he picked the wrong name to make a name off of.
Right,
so
you're getting a little bit old school in his ass.
Oh yeah, man, I take that kind of a little personal. Like, oh, you think you're ready for a fight like me? I'm not just any pickup kind of fight, like, kind of guy. You know, just off the couch kind of. I stay in the gym, so I'm excited, man. I'm hungry. I'm ready to come in there and show everybody who Cassius Cain is. I mean, a lot of people, they know me, but they don't know who I am. So I got to make some noise at at 170 and try and make a run at that legacy title, you know, LFA title. That's the goal. So.
Yeah, well, I feel you there. You know, there's one thing I kind of wanted to ask you because it's kind of screwed up. You know, I don't look up, you know, Tapology or anything like that. I generally just go from my heart on this thing. But they got this thing so screwed up, brother, that I had to bring it up. They got your first pro fight in 2011, but then all your amateur fights are 2012, 2013. Clarify, when did you go pro, bro?
I want to say it was 2011.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. But if you go to your Tapology page, they got a bunch of stuff on there. They got Xavier Lewis, Jesus Sandoval, Jacob Kiefer, and
yeah, those are all my amateur fights.
It's under amateur results. That's the funny thing, though.
Yeah. Yeah, man, there's a, like,
I love that, man. It makes you look better that way.
There's a few websites that have some stuff mixed up. I'm like, I don't know where you got your information, but.
Yeah. You know, but going backstage to Branson before your last fight, I saw a young man who has a lot of pride and, you know, you kept yourself a lot. You sat there, you were warming up, you kept to yourself. What goes through a fight, you know, the thought of a young fighter like yourself that, you know, is truly getting ready for the next step or opportunity in his career, you know, what I took from it was somebody that was very deep in thought and very passionate about the sport. How is it, and what do you go through, you know, before each and every fight?
Oh, man, it was it's kind of crazy, actually. When you were back there, you know, I was just kind of in my zone, and I ended up getting a video or something. Somebody sent me of you, like, shooting me, warming up and shadow boxing, and man, that was kind of cool to see that because, like, I'm kind of, like, so in my zone, you know. I don't really kind of pay attention to other stuff like that. I just kind of, you know, tunnel vision, like, just bullseye on the target, you know, kind of mindset. You get this kind of got to block everything else out, like, when you start, like, coming down for a weight cut and stuff, and then at weigh-ins and everything, you know. So you just got to be dialed in and focused. I mean, it's a very serious sport, and you can get messed up, you know, if you're not taking it serious. So, man, there's so much to it. Like, I don't know. I'm a very prideful person, so I'm very passionate about my goals and my dreams and stuff. So this is just something that I already know. It's like, you know, it's destined for me to be in this sport and where I'm at right now. And I gotta just keep chopping and keep on grinding.
Well, I think you will, my friend. I think you will. You know, I kind of told you my show's a little bit of a 360 aspect. Got a little tongue tied a little bit early in the show. It's probably like my 15th show this week. It's been crazy, but you know, we look at life and we all have a reason or an objective why we do something. You know, we all try to figure out who we are, and we take that path in life. What led you to the sport, and what ultimately had you decide that this is something that you were going to take on as a profession?
I would say competition in general. Like, ever since I was a kid, I just was one of my first memories. Well, I was born in Denver, and we moved to Nebraska and then back to, like, from Minnesota to Nebraska and back. And right before I started kindergarten in Nebraska, they took me to this wrestling tournament, and I didn't know what wrestling was. I only, like, seen it on TV. I thought it was like WWE style, you know. But when we go into the gym, they're like, give me the singlet and shoes, and like, all right, go put this kid on his back. And I look at my mom and my brother, like, what? This is weird. But I went out there, and I threw the first kid I wrestled in a headlock and pinned him, and it was like, wow, this is cool. And it just kind of stuck with me from there. It was competition and wrestling, and just I think that's when I fell in love with the aspect of competing, you know. So ever since I was a kid, and then when I went to college, I just always, well, in high school, I was trying to, you know, make a run at a state title. I came really close to a state title in wrestling at 160 my senior year, lost by 1 point. So that was another thing. I just didn't sit well with me to just let my competing career just kind of set with that loss. So I went on to a JUCO and wrestled there in college, and same competition, man. It was, everybody was just as good, if not better than you. So it was tough, man. I went 6-5 in college, and really, like, every tournament, you know, I questioned myself, like, man, is this what I really want to do? But I just dug it out, you know, and kept grinding. And my college roommate ended up getting a fight and invited me up to watch him fight in Brookings, South Dakota. Well, I drove up there and watched him, and I'd watched UFC and stuff before that, so, and then seeing somebody that I know do it, kind of put the ball in play, and watched him fight, and he was like, would you be interested? And I was like, I don't know, you know, it'd be like something fun to train in. So I think about it. So I was driving home. It was about a 3-hour drive, and we were about an hour away from home, and he calls me. He's like, hey, man, I got you a fight if you want to do it. I was like, oh. I was like, how much time do I have? He's like, oh, about 30 days. I was like, well, all right. I didn't even know, like, fight camps and stuff like that, you know. So I took the fight and just did, like, my old school, like, high school wrestling workouts and stuff. And I trained in boxing and stuff like that in high school, but never really competed because my mom would never let me, like, she's like, oh, you're too pretty, you're going to break your face. So I was friends with a girl that had a key to the boxing gym in Norfolk. And I actually dated her best friend. So we would always go to the gym and just work out and hang out and stuff. So I spent a lot of time at the gym, and not a lot of people knew that I was working on the boxing and stuff. So it had its benefits, you know. But I always wanted to box in competition and stuff. Like I'd help them on the team and stuff, but I could never fight. And it kind of felt like the water boy situation. Like my coach is like trying to get my mom to sign the waiver. Like, oh, he's really good. Like he's, you know, he's tough. He's hanging with these guys that have gone the Golden Gloves and won. And, you know, he's hanging with them. Like, you know, you need to let him fight. And she's like, no, he's not fighting. So just kind of, I guess that was kind of it right there. Like, you're not going to let me fight. And this is what I want to do. So.
You know, sometimes we go against the ones we love the most just to do what we're gonna do. You know, and I'm glad you did. You know, how does she hold up now, knowing that, you know, you did go into the sport?
Yeah, when I first started, man, my grandma, my uncle, everybody tried to talk me out of my first fight. They're like, "Don't do it. If it's for the money, we'll pay you the money of it." It's not about the money. I think my first fight I made like $80 as amateur, and it was like a 2-hour drive away, so it was like it wasn't even, you know, worth that much money. But it was just the fact that I truly loved the sport of MMA, and I guess making the jump from amateur to pro, I had a pretty good pro debut, and you know, made a pretty good debut in the MMA world. So that was just another thing too. And it's just like every fight just kind of built up to the, you know, you fighting the toughest guys. In the state as amateurs, you know, so.
Yeah, you've kind of, it's like this, I don't know, the guys your age and a little bit younger, they've made this, you know, a lot of them have transitioned over from wrestling into the sport, and you're kind of seeing a profound impact in that aspect. You know, before, a lot of wrestlers, you know, because I've interviewed them, you know, I've interviewed guys that have transitioned, and they're like, man, I prefer wrestling, you know, and they're like, because it's more of a one-on-one. It's, you know, you don't got to worry about the judges. If, you know, you lose to yourself. But then they make this transition into MMA and they kind of fall in love with it. You look at Aaron Pico, Juan Archuleta, Joey Black Eyes Davis, you know, just to name a few that have transitioned over, you know, now are creating this new era or new aspect of the sport. You know, I interviewed Dan the Beast Severn last week, and, you know, his main love and everything in life was Greco-Roman wrestling. And it's kind of weird because you see this aspect now finally transitioning. Before, it was just like, you know, Muay Thai and BJJ and things like that. But, you know, wrestling has created a new era fighter that I tell you, you got to watch out for. And when I saw you in Branson, that was one thing that I realized. I said, man, I got to have this kid on the show. And the more I thought about it, the more I wanted you on the show, and that's why you're on the show tonight. You know, it took me a while to reach out to you because I have such a list, you know, of fighters that are already asking to come on. But, you know, I knew there was something special about you. You know, I think LFA has got their hand on someone that's going to make a name for himself in this sport. You know, the determination is there. I've seen that, man. You put on a hell of a fight. The fight could have gone either way. You know, the thing that I think most intrigued me about you is you don't talk crap for real. I mean, you're just about being the warrior, going into the cage and actually showing what you can do than you are, you know, more talking about it. Who instilled that type of aspect in you to be the humble gentleman or the humble warrior going into an event?
Oh, man, I guess I would come from my old wrestling coach at Paul Stock. When we were growing up and stuff, I remember, like, kids would lose in tournaments and they'd slam their headgear down and, you know, take off running out the gym, you know, like making a scene and stuff. And I always remember Coach Stock, he would say, like, he would point that guy out and be like, you see that guy over there, like, making an ass of himself and his team and his town? You know, he's like, that seems like represents not only, you know, your club, but it's your city and your coach and everybody else. So as a young kid, I kind of realized that was, you know, you don't act like that way and you don't, like, you don't talk crap to people. You just, if you're good, you're good. You show up and you let your abilities do the talking for you, kind of stuff. So that's kind of how I took that in the MMA world too. Like, a lot of guys come out here and they talk trash, like, oh, I'm going to knock you out, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then they get beat. But in my mind, I think, man, how does that guy feel after he, like, talk all that crap to that guy, and then, you know, you lose a fight, you kind of look like an idiot. So I never want to look like an idiot unless, you know, so I don't have to talk crap. I just go out there, and I know myself that I trained my ass off, knowing that I did everything possible to prepare myself for the fight. You know, my cardio, everything. I go down the checklist, man. I do it all. So there's never a doubt in my mind that I'm not ready for the fight. So I think that has a lot to do with it too. Like, my confidence level is to the roof because I know I'm ready every time I step in that cage.
And you certainly have proved it time and time again. You know, how loyal are you to legacy? Let's say after this fight with Caelan Born, you know, an organization like Bellator or, you know, even the UFC, you know, what if they were to come at you? You know, where does the loyalty land? You know, are you under a multi-fight deal, or would you be willing to take a fight in another promotion if it were to rear its head?
Man, I go wherever the best opportunity is right now. I'm not under any contracts or anything with LFA. They've been really good to me, and they always offer me, you know, good fights, and pay is always really good. So, I mean, I'm the type of person, I'll take an opportunity wherever I can, but I'm not trying to burn any bridges, you know, so.
Yeah, I feel you there. You know, my homie, Syed Awad, who fights in Bellator, he just had another kid, and he's kind of like you. He's been around the sport, you know, a little while. And, you know, I asked him, now that you've had your second child, does it put that much more relevance in how you're going to go into a fight? Now that you have a child on the way, you know, is it going to put that much more relevance in your heart as a man and as a warrior going in the cage knowing that you have an extra mouth to feed?
I kind of already had that, like, drive and determination in my mind already. Like, you know, you gotta take care of your family and protect everything, like, you know, that you hold true. So, in a sense, yes, but I don't like to put a lot of pressure on myself like that. But I guess, yeah. But
like, baby, gotta eat.
Yeah, for sure, you know, like, it's, there's a lot of emotions to it all. Like, man, there's so much, like, it's nerve-wracking, kind of, like, it's like, I know I'm prepared for it, but even if you prepare yourself, there's always that, you know, something that you're not going to be ready for, just like a fight, you know, so it's exciting, a nervous journey, but we'll be great, we'll be fine with our family and friends that we have with us soon.
And I know you're blessed that and happy and knowing that you're having a boy, so that way you don't have to chase them boys off if you had a little girl. You know, it's crazy because I know how brothers be. They be like, nah, man, homie, don't be stepping up on my daughter.
Yeah.
And you seem exactly that way.
I already got
a little
sister, and she's 16. She's
about
to start
driving
and stuff. Yeah, man, I am. I'm like, I'm protective of her, so... If I would have had a daughter, it would have been the same, just a little more, you know, step up. But no, it's all good, though.
Yeah. You know, I love it because you've got a tremendous opportunity in LFA 48. I think you're a hell of a warrior. That's one of the reasons why you're on my show. I think you've proven to the sport that you deserve to be where you're at. You know, if you had to make, and I know you don't talk crap, but if you had to make a statement about what your fans are, my listeners can expect from you out of, you know, facing off against Kalen Bourne at LFA 48. What would that statement be, my friend?
Man, I do have a statement, really. I mean, a lot of you guys think that they can just come and take me down and lay on me and, you know, that's going to get them a win. But I've been grinding hard in the gym and working on my wrestling and my boxing. So be ready for, you know, anything because I'm ready. So you take me to the ground. We're going to dance, you know? So, man, like I said, I like to talk crap, but it's going to be a great fight. It's going to be exciting. So don't blink. And it's going to be a good fight, man.
Yeah. You know, well, one thing he wanted to fight just as much as you, you know? So in that respect, it's an opportunity for him and for you. You took it because, you know, it was offered to you. You know, it's, you have really nothing to gain from this. From what I'm trying to say is, I mean, you're a well-established veteran in the sport and making a good name for yourself. You know, you have everything to lose from this fight, actually, to a young up-and-comer. But, you know, that's the sportsman you are. You took this fight because you're going to show that you're willing to take on anybody and everybody. You know, how does Cassius Cain look at the sport, not just as a warrior, but as a man? Would you say it's helped you grow and evolve in certain aspects that you wouldn't be at if you didn't partake in the sport?
Yeah, man, I think it has helped me a lot in life, growing physically and, you know, like you said, spiritually too. You just gotta stay humble, man. Like you said, like, this guy, he's an up and comer. He's trying to make a name, and like I said, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, you know, whether you're the champ or not, you always got a bullseye or a target on your back. Somebody wants your spot. You know, it's nothing personal. It's just business. Everybody's trying to get to, you know, that ultimate goal of making it to the big show. And, you know, you got like 1,000 guys, and we all got the same mindset and idea. So it's like climbing a mountain, you know, and just pick the next guy off and just keep on climbing up. So, you know, it's nothing personal. Like, I'm sure Kalen has the same mindset as me. Like, you know, just, you know, you line him up and we'll knock him down kind of mindset. I mean, that's how you got to be. You got a lot of guys that are like, oh, I don't want to fight him. He's only got this many fights. Or, oh, he's got too many fights. Like, I don't care how many fights he got. He got no fights. He got 3 fights. I'll fight anybody. I don't care. I'd fight a guy that had 100 fights. I don't care. I love the fight. This is what I do. It's what I train for. And this is what I'm made for, man. I'm an MMA fighter.
Yeah, I love that. That's why I got you on the show, bro. You inspired me, man. Like I said, not very many young fighters nowadays do that, but you did. And, you know, here we are now, and you're fitting to go into a tremendous opportunity for yourself. You know, you got a baby on the way, and you got a lot of good things going for you, homie. You know, on my show, I like to give the fighters that come on an opportunity that, you know, to thank people that have helped them along the way, or pushed them, or just stood side by side, you know, with them when they needed them the most. Who in your life would you say has been the key factors in getting you at where you're at today?
Man, there's so many people to thank. I would have to say my management, DC Management, man. I've been with them since I was an amateur. After my first amateur fight, he actually called me on my way home from my fight. I was still about an hour away from home, and he called me and told me to come into his office. And when I walked into Train's office, he had my fight up and everything. So I was like, man, this guy kind of already knew who I was. It was pretty cool. So, I mean, I've been with DC since I was an amateur, and he's helped me a lot with, promoting myself and getting me sponsors and stuff. And I've had a lot of the same sponsors since I was an amateur. So, a lot of guys have been on board since, you know, 5-6 years of fighting. And they've seen, you know, the ups and downs of it all. So, all my sponsors, Animal Instinct, everybody at my gym, at Team Doyle, my coach, Coach Mick, he's a great coach, man. He's the way we go into a fight camp. I love how he sets our game plans up and does all the homework and everything. So it's like I said, it just, when you're going into the fight day, you got like a checklist in your mind, and every bullet is hit, you know, everything's ready to go. So Coach Mick, Team Doyle, everybody there.
Are you there?
Yeah, man, I'm just kind of having a brain fart. trying to think of some more people. I don't want to forget anybody. Man, everybody has been such a support since I was an amateur, man. All my friends and family. But really, my mom, she's been the biggest supporter. The whole time, she hasn't missed a fight. She's been there since the beginning, and she really didn't like that I fought, but she's come around. She's seen how much I put into it and how much I enjoy doing this. So, yep.
That's gonna be awesome, man. Because I know a young gentleman by the name of Jamal Pogue, who is in Bellator, and his mother is his best friend, his number one fan. You know, I got to admit, I kind of like the idea that, you know, you turned your mom around on that factor, and now she's your biggest fan. You know, that's got to be dope, man. I mean, you proved it wrong for what?
Yeah, a lot of my family's like that, too. There's my other Aunt Kathy. She won't come watch my fights, but she hates that I do it, but she sees, like, how invested I am in this and how, you know, how determined I am to get to the big show. And I work a full-time job and I still come home and train and, you know, find time. And you don't do that unless you love this, you know?
Yeah. Yes, that's absolutely true, man. I mean, I've been in this business 23 years and I tell you, I've quit 20,000 times, but I'm still here, you know, shooting and doing radio. And, you know, it's just, it's a part of us that, you know, well, they say, man, you don't decide when to let the sport go. The sport decides when to let you go. Right. And I truly think that's a true statement there. You know, my friend, it was truly an honor to have you on the show. I mean, you're fighting in just a little over a week, I believe, you know, a week and a half to almost 2 weeks.
11 days.
Yeah. I wish you the best of luck, my friend, you know. Yeah, the countdown's begun, you know. I wish you the best of luck. You know, you truly are a tremendous fighter. I'd love to have you back on the show in the future. You know, I'd like to share more of you with the sports world, because I truly think you found your stride, and I think you're ready to show the world who you are about. And that's what my show is about, is giving the fighters a voice and sharing them. And it was truly an honor to have you on. I'm going to toss the mic to you. If you got any sponsors, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours, my brother.
Yeah, man, just want to thank you guys for having me on the show. You can follow me on Instagram, @Cassius_Kane, Twitter, 05Kane. Yeah, man, just come support. I always add everybody. I'm not too big-headed to, like, follow you back and nothing like that. I appreciate all the support, and I want to thank everybody from my team, from Team Doyle, all my sponsors, everybody that supports Cassius Kane. Thank you guys for having me.
No worries, my man. You keep following your dreams, son. Keep following your dreams because you're tremendous at it, brother. Thanks, have a good night. God bless you, man.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Cassius Kane. I can't even speak tonight, man. You know, I've done so many dang radio shows that I don't even think I know how to think right anymore. It's just been that kind of week, and it's fight week coming up. So without further ado, we're going to take a sponsor timeout. When we come back, we're going to have Lucas Clay. Be right back.
What up, it's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
And we're back. Let's go ahead and give Lucas Clay a call.
Hello.
Yeah, Lucas?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Don McGuire with The Fighter's Voice. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing tremendous. You know, it's, first and foremost, I'd like to say thank you for coming on the program. You know, the last time I seen you, you had a tremendous outing against Mike Breeden. You know, a fighter that a lot of people said you couldn't beat. A lot of people, you know, predicted him to be the next UFC prodigy. And you went out of LFA in Branson, and you handled your business. What, when you look back at that fight, Lucas, how much of yourself did you give to that fight, and what did that fight mean to you walking away from it?
Well, I give my all in every single fight, and I give my all every single day in practice. But I really didn't learn anything about myself. I'm just happy that I got to introduce people to my tough side, you know, because anybody who knows me credits me on my heart, and I don't know how to quit. I'd have to be unconscious to stop fighting, and that's just how I live my life. You know, I'm not a quitter, and I can honestly say that, and not just trying to sound good, but I owe a lot of credit to Mike. That's a tough guy, because he's got it too. He's got a strong spirit, but I'm just glad that was my night.
Yeah, you know that. You know, I'm Glory. You know, I'm transparent. You know, I'm Glory MMA. You know, I'm their gym photographer, and you know, I've shot Mike. I've known Mike for years, and he's a hell of a fighter. And you know, two warriors got locked in the cage that night, and
Yes, sir. You
came out on top. And I was sitting in the back with Emmanuel E.J. Brooks, and we talked about this fight. And truly, man, you dug deep. And, you know, when you look at that first round when you backpacked him and, you know, you went to work, you know, you truly showed the crowd, and especially all the people that mattered, that a warrior came that night, man. Not a fighter, but a warrior. You know, might even change it to gladiator. I think that would be more like it. You know, up until that point, one of my favorite fights was Julian Marquez and Chris Harris at Bellator 150. You know, it had been a fight. I like fights that fighters don't stand, you know, they just stand there and bang to bang. You know, they go toe to toe. Ain't nobody giving. Nobody, no room. And that's what you did that night with Mike Breeden. And you now became my favorite fight when I look back at fights in these promotions. You know, what does the sport truly mean to Lucas Clay? Because, you know, you're a young and up-and-coming warrior, and, I mean, you're on a 7-fight win streak, 8-fight win streak, something like that. You know, you're doing tremendous in the sport.
I said I don't pay attention to it. I can't tell you what a win streak is. I forget my record sometimes.
Yeah, you know. But
to me, what the sport means to me, it's really all I know. And sometimes that's depressing because I build my entire life around fighting. Like I wake up in the morning, I go to work, and the only thing on my mind is, am I going to be off in time to make it to the gym? You know, and I just catch myself daydreaming and shadow boxing, and it's embarrassing at times. My wife gets on me about it. She says, baby, you always are shadow boxing, you know, and I don't want to, because fighting is a part of my life. It's not my life, but I'm addicted. I don't know what else I would do. It consumes 80% of my thoughts, of my private thoughts. And if I'm not punching something, I lose my mind. So it's therapy for me, for lack of better words. And not only that, it's just, I get to be myself. You can talk to people and you can show people. Actions speak louder than words. And the sport is 100% actions for me. So I get to truly be the real Lucas. And I can't be that in the world because everything is a fighting life. But the way that we do it in the cage, it's just all the BS is cut out.
I feel you. You know, I feel the same way, you know. And the way you conduct yourself in the cage is tremendous. And, you know, I hear what you're talking about with, you know, it consumes you because – bro, I'm the same way. I shoot fights, but yet I still do a radio show 3, 4, 5 times a week. I don't have the heart to tell anybody no. And, you know, it does consume you to a point. And that only shows the passion and the love that you have for what you do. You know, I kind of want to take you back in your career because, to me, it was at a pivotal moment. And, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong or you don't even have to answer the question if you don't want to, my brother. But I want to take you back to a lesson that you were taught with William Starks. Because from that moment on, a new Lucas Clay emerged, a defiant gladiator, a man that was on a mission. You haven't lost a fight since. I don't even like to call them losses. I like to call them lessons learned. You know, what did you take away from that lesson that set you on this path of invincibility or being indestructible at this point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was a little arrogant during that fight, and this is the first time I've ever said that to anybody. Like, I haven't even said it to myself until this moment, but I thought no amateur can beat me in my weight class, and I would have bet every penny in my pocket on any given day of that. Because I was in there sparring with UFC fighters, and I held my own. And I'm a pretty young guy, but, you know, fighting is something I understand. And I understand that mentally I adapt to a fight differently than a lot of fighters do. And, I gave myself too much credit. And I've always been a pretty decent grappler. That's why I can shine at, because I'm very creative on the ground. And I'm pretty hard to take down. I have decent scrambling skills. But Will, he showed me that not only was I beatable, he beat me in my own game. And I look back at that fight at least once a week, and I see that, you know, I had to go back to my striking against him, and that was kind of foreign to me. And I just couldn't stop him from taking me down. I've also been claimed as being pretty strong. I'm a pretty strong guy for my size. but he felt like 4 men. That I've never felt anything like it. He was explosive, and he was extremely tenacious. But, you know, I learned that even when you think you're good, your opponent is good too. And you got to show up, man. You just got to give it your all the time. I did not give training my all for that fight. I just thought that I was going to come in and just beat the guy. And I did. And I'm glad that happened in my amateur career, because I'm always going to respect that fight. And I'm never going to make that mistake again, because it haunts me to this day.
Man, profound words, man. You're very wise for your age, my man. I think that's why I kind of noticed you kind of stood out, you know. And the same with Cassius Cain, who was just on before you. You know, you both fought on the same card, and for some reason it was just like, out of all the fighters that fought that night, you two stood out to me. You know, I ultimately ended up taking a selfie with you. You know, one that I used my profile picture for a little bit, actually, because, you know, that war that you got into, Reed, man, you know, I'm in this sport, but I'm also a fan of the sport. And I got to tell you what, you know, I've watched Breeden fight over and over and over again. You know, a lot of amateur fights. I've been there in the gym. And, man, what you guys put on that night was tremendous. You know, that was world-class talent going at it toe for toe, man. Not one of you willing to give up any aspect of your game. What does it mean for you to have people like Emmanuel E.J. Brooks and the other people that you correlate yourself with in this sport? What does it mean to have that type of support taking you into those moments?
Man, I am blessed, especially to have somebody like E.J. in my corner, man. Yeah, it's like there's a lot of mistakes to be made in this sport. And if somebody's already made the mistake and they learn from it, you know, you don't have to make the same mistake twice. And EJ is not stingy with his wisdom. And I'm very grateful for that. And I have so many teammates like that. But I can tell you one thing. I don't know that there's many men on this planet that's going to out-wrestle you. And he's like, it's almost like he's 1,000 pounds. It's screwed to the ground. I'm telling you, I am not exaggerating. It's hard to lift one of his legs off of the mat. You can grab it all you want, and it's just there. He's a strong guy, and he'll tell you how to get your wrestling better. See, a lot of guys' pride gets in the way, and they don't want to give you those pointers because, you know, they know it's only a matter of time before you get past their signature move. They don't want to teach you the defense to their signature move, but EJ is not like that. He's a great man, and we have dozens of men like that in my gym. I'm in the right place.
Yeah, you truly are, because, you know, a lot of times in the sport what ends up happening for young guys like you is your idols or people you look up to end up becoming your rivals, and then you end up facing them in the cage, you know. And I've seen it happen time and time again, and, you know, you can see why some of the older school aspect don't want to give up all the secrets, because, you know, they never know when they're going to have to face somebody like you that's still undefeated in the sport, that's coming up, that's, you know, making a huge name for himself and, you know, showing tremendous ability. And, you know, it's awesome, because I've had EJ on the show several times. I've interviewed him. I've shot him. You know, he's a great man in his walk, and I'll give you that. There's not very many out there like him. You know, Cassius Cain talked about it earlier, and we talked about that wrestling background and how it's kind of changing the sport into a new era aspect. You know, you look at the warriors that are coming up now, and you really got to be well-versed in all aspects, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, wrestling, boxing, and other aspects. You know, who was it that ultimately defined you into the warrior you are? Because your game is 360. It's on point, brother.
I appreciate that, but I got to give that credit to my dad, because my dad was a martial artist himself. So, you know, I learned judo from him. That was the first martial art I technically learned. And then I moved on to boxing, then taekwondo. And then, you know, I kind of kind of relaxed on it. You know, he would still teach me techniques and everything, but he wasn't, like, forcing me to do it. He just waited for me to come back around. And when I was 14, I decided I wanted to be a professional MMA fighter. But I didn't just want to be an MMA fighter. I didn't want to just know every aspect of mixed martial arts. I wanted to be a master in each aspect of mixed martial arts. And I figured that's going to take a long time to do. I better get started now. So I started learning Muay Thai. Then I tried to focus a little bit on kickboxing and then jiu-jitsu. And in high school, I started wrestling my junior year. And I wrestled my junior and senior year. I went to state both times, but that's about as far as I got. I just made it to state. I probably could have placed my senior year, but I didn't. And, when I was 18, I had my first MMA fight, and it just kept going up from there.
Yeah, it's been crazy since then, too. You know,
yeah.
If you had it on, I mean, gosh, I'd love to see you on this next LFA card because I think you're deserving. You know, what's up next for Lucas Clay? What would you like next to transpire for you? I mean, right now, the way I look at it, man, the way I look at you as a warrior in the sport, you know, Bellator, King of the Cage, any promotion would be silly not to reach out to you and have you for a fight, or do you got something in the works, my friend?
I appreciate that a lot. You just dishing out the compliments. I'm so grateful. But my team is working to get me on the card and with LFA, but, you know, nothing is in stone. But, you know, I'm grateful for any opportunity, but, you know, I want to make the most out of my time. So I hope something big comes along soon. You know, I really wanted to be on the Contender Series, but that wasn't for me at this time. And, you know, I'd love to fight for a big promotion like Bellator. And I know I got to put in my dues before I can get an opportunity in the UFC. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal. I want to be a world champion, but that's the bottom line. I really don't care who it's for. My goal is to be a world champion before I'm 25.
I think you'll do that, man. And let's get one thing clear, brother. And I don't mean to check you on the show, but I'm not dishing out compliments to you, homie. I'm just telling you what I see. You know, I don't take this sport lightly. You know, I'm like you. You know, I don't take this sport lightly. Nor do I take fights that become my favorite fights lightly. You know, and you go back, if you didn't watch Bellator 150, Chris Harris versus Julian Marquez, go back and watch that fight, young man, and then give me a phone call, and then you could tell me thank you, because that's what you did for me that night. You know, you went in there, like I said, against Mike Breeden, who was a formidable opponent in every essence. Hell, I got his teammate coming on after you. I got Zach Cummings on, one of his coaches. But the thing of it is, you proved yourself not to me, not to anybody else, but you proved yourself to yourself that night. You showed the sport what you're capable of, but you showed yourself what you're capable of doing. And, man, that's still that fight, I can look at it right now in my mind like it was yesterday, bro. When you had his back, you know, you were going for it, man. And then rounds 2 and 3, it was an all-out war, you know. And what do you take away from moments like that, man? Does it amp you up even more knowing that you went out there, you gave it your best, and you came out victorious?
Yeah.
But you know,
yes,
do you still got that grind?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, I got this saying. It's I ain't made of glass, you know. I'm concrete. And I'm very proud of that, but, you know, I'm not surprised. I've known that since I was a little kid. You know, just, I don't think I've ever gotten a fair fight until I got into martial arts. Everybody's always, was always bigger, older, stronger. But, you know, my dad always taught me when something needed to be done, you don't make excuses, you just get it done. If it, you know, it's, nobody said it was going to be easy. That's what I signed up for.
Now, you're 22 years old. It says here you fight out of St. Charles MMA. You know, it's quite a place to come out of. You know, I don't know if how much thought you put into that aspect of the sport, but there's a lot of great fighters that have come out of there. Even J.W. Wright has been up in that area and messed around a lot in different aspects. When you look at the St. Louis MMA scene, you know, how hard is it for a fighter like yourself, Lucas, to make a name for yourself, being that, you know, MMA is so prominent in St. Louis?
Well, a big problem with me has been getting fights, and it seems harder than it should be for me. I think it's just bad luck, because there is no way that all of these fighters are afraid of me. You know, they wouldn't be in the sport if that was the case. But in order for me to build my notoriety, I have to put on these shows. And like what we saw with Mike Breen, I could have gave the fans dozens of those if I had just gotten the opportunities. You know, they're being cheated when I am not staying active. You know, so if that one big issue would subside, I could make a huge name for myself, I think.
I think you could, too. You know, and Sue, watch the transition, and right before they came up with Ultimate Fighter Undefeated, there had been a transition in the sport where a lot of these undefeated fighters weren't wanting, they were hand-picking their opponents, you know, and I'm transparent, so I'll call it like it is. I've been in this sport long enough to where I can say what I can say, but I don't see that in you, man. I see a fighter in you that is willing to take on anybody they put in front of you. You just want to fight. And
hey, man,
I tell
you said
what, yeah, Ian Matthews, Scott Coker, Rich Cho, man, get this brother a fight. I'm telling you, man. Oh, they just don't know, man. Go watch the footage and then come back and talk to me. You know, that's what, you know, with you, you are. You're willing to fight anybody. And,
anybody,
you know, to hear you say that it's hard to get fights, it's kind of a sad thing in this sport, man, because you see now that people are picking and choosing, where before it was an opportunity came your way, you took it. You know,
yes.
Do you think that has to do with the over inundation of fights in the sport? I mean, because you look at the way it used to be, you'd have maybe two or three a week. Now, from Tuesday through Sunday, there's an MMA event somewhere. Do you think that because of that aspect, that they're just pulling fighters from wherever and not truly looking at the good talent to bring to the shows?
Well, yes and no. I think one much bigger issue is it just outweighs the one you just described. And I forget how long ago it was, but I remember watching this video that they filmed of the Ultimate Fighter tryouts, and I can't really remember what number the season was, but I believe it was the one with Louis Galano, or whatever his name, green hair. But it was that season, and Dana White made an announcement to all of the people trying out, and he said, "I like records," you know. So people who are undefeated, you know, that appeals to him. And his voice is one of the most powerful voices in our sport. And I think a lot of fighters know that, you know, that upper level, they will look at you much more positively if you have a zero, you know, in your record. They love that. And fighters are trying to protect that in hopes that if they preserve that, they'll get a better opportunity. You know, make more money, get more fame, get to the big show, and that zero will aid them in that. That's just my opinion.
I kind of like your point. You know, I really do. You know, we talked about your father teaching you, you know, judo at a very young age, and you learning all aspects of the sport at a very young age. You know, when you have that little bit of downtime, and you know, as you said, your wife already gets on you because you spend too much time in the sport. But when you do get that little bit of downtime, what aspect does Lucas Clay like to immerse himself in outside of the sport?
Outside of the sport? Wow.
He said, there ain't nothing outside of the sport, bro.
Man, nothing. I like being a father. That's one of the true treasures of my life. Other than fighting, you know, that's what gives me purpose. But I like to hang out with my kids and just, I like to watch them grow up and remind me of myself. They look just like me, and it's almost like I'm living another life through them. It's like I'll live on even when I'm not here because of them. But that's the only two things. I'm a born guy. And like I said, it gets depressing at times because people hit me with the question like you just hit me with. And I realize, man, I put all my chips in this basket. It's got to work. And I'm truly dedicated, but that's a blessing and a curse because I've given up a social life. You know, I only have my family and work and fighting. Those are the three things because I sat down one day and I had to prioritize when I thought about where I wanted to be in 10 years. And I was 20 years old. I said, hey, I'm going to do three things every day, no matter where. I'm going to stay consistent until I succeed. And those three things are going to be fighting, being a father, and providing for my family. You know, I got to make money because we all got to eat. But, you know, that's what I did.
I feel you there, man. I really feel you there, you know, and at the same time, you're creating a legacy, not just for yourself, but for your family. You're writing that first chapter in the life of Lucas Clay, and it's a tremendous one, my friend. You know, I can't wait for you to get another opportunity. I hope a promotion reaches out to you and calls you in because, you know, it's funny because people ask me, Don, did you see that? What fight? You know? And
yeah.
It's... You know, well, I'm in this business, and, you know, I've been for 23 years, so it's like, unless it's a really tremendous card, I you know, a fight is just a fight to me. And I, you know, I'll say it because that's just the way I roll. But, you know, I look at the young and up-and-comers like you, and there's very few that I hand-choose to bring on the show. You know, I did with Cassius Cain, I did with you. You know, out of the whole slew of fighters that night, you were the only two that set a precedent in my heart and in my mind and made me realize I had to have you on the show. I think you're a tremendous young athlete. I hope you get an opportunity soon, you know, because I think you could show the world, you know, what a true sportsman is truly about and a man that truly dedicates his life to the sport. And like you said, you put all your eggs in one basket, you know, you're in it to win it. And I think one day you will be a champion, my friend. You know, I'm truly honored that you came on the show. It's truly a blessing to meet you in life and to see you, you know, go to work in the cage and now to interview you in this aspect. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, my friend. If you have any friends, family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours.
Okay.
Luis.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just want to give a shout-out to St. Charles and MMA. I got little words because they all would do the injustice. But and Team Vahe, Eyewitness Fitness, I love my team. Like I said, my management, Empire Sports Marketing and Management, my sponsors, the Ace Club, King Security. And shout out to you, Don. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, shout out to you for showing the sport that there's still warriors willing to bang and not run, man. I tell you, man, go watch that Chris Harris versus Julian Marquez Bellator 150, and you'll go, damn, and then you'll make you realize how much of an impact you made on me as a fan of the sport, man. You truly gained a fan of me that night, son, and I wish you the best of luck in your career because you got a hell of a career coming to you, man. You know, thank you so much for joining the show and taking time away from the family. I know you don't get much of it, but I truly appreciate it. And thanks once again for coming on, brother.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one.
God bless you. All right, man. Peace out. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lucas Clay. If you haven't seen that fight, go to LFA 42, Lucas Clay versus Mike Breeden. Oh my God! You want to talk about a war? It was, you know, Mike Breeden is no slouch. Either is Lucas Clay. They two fighters that went in there, and I tell you what, man, my jaw hit the ground. I was truly stunned at the ability of these two warriors, and neither one of them gave an inch. And when you see that come fight night, you know the matchmaker did a hell of a job on that card. Next, we got my brother Zach Cummings coming on, but I need to take a drink, and so I'm going to take a quick little time out. And when we come back, we'll have Zach Cummings, hopefully. I'm not going to promise, but hopefully. Let's see, what do I want to do? We'll play a little bit of Nate White until I come back in about 30 seconds. Inside nothing, wants overflow. Beside something, nothing they control. Lay me down once and let me at your face. Enough of Nate screaming in our ears. We're gonna go ahead and give my brother Zach Cummings a call, a tremendous UFC veteran.
Hello.
Hey Zach, this is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How you doing tonight, bro?
Good, what's up?
Don't sell to it, dude.
I'm good to go.
You sound a little tired there, bro.
You can say that.
Well, you know, that's kind of what I want to get into. You know, you look at you're a tremendous veteran in the sport. You give all of you in that aspect, but you also run a gym. How hard is it for Zach Cummings to run both aspects now that you're also a father?
Oh, I mean, it's just, you got to find the right balance. You know, sometimes whenever I really need to focus on the gym, I kind of have to ease back to training a little bit. And then whenever, you know, a fight coming up, basically I need to be very, very efficient with the gym and still give it my time. But I also need to kind of take any extra free time that I have in my life and put it into training and, you know, extra workouts and all that type of stuff just to keep going. It's just a constant balance of trying to keep building both aspects of everything.
You know, I look at the last lesson you got taught, you know, with, you know, Brazzers, and, you know, me and you, we talked about it. It's kind of weird. It's like an LFA 42 show tonight. I had Cassius Cain. I had Lucas Clay, two fighters that were on the card. You're part of Glory. You were there with Breeden and other aspects of the sport that night. You know, when you look at lessons in life, you know, how much of a setback do you feel that outing was for you? You know, you and I, we spoke about it. We talked about the fight. I gave you my fair thoughts. What are the thoughts of Zach Cummings on, you know, how you pick up and teach yourself and move forward?
I mean, you always have to learn from it, figure out what, you know, what you could take away. You know, it was a super, super close fight, and I knew that when it was going to the judges. You know, I think the lack of just numbers and just staying busy. You know, I think I was relying on my power way too much that eventually he'd run into something. And, you know, it didn't work out for me. So he got a couple of takedowns, even though he didn't do much with them. You know, and I truly think that the headbutt in the first round, you know, with me bleeding, kind of showed that I was one bleeding and stuff like that. So it was super close, but, you know, I need to be a lot more offensive. I need to just make sure that my punch count is higher and have a high output. But, man, when it comes down to it, you know, I was always a little struggling, a little worried of just absolutely let myself open up. you know, with the huge weight cuts that I have. So, you know, making the decision to go up to 185, back to back to middleweight where I was before I was in the UFC and stuff, I think is going to, one, allow me to kind of live my life a little happier, and two, you know, use my speed and really just focus on, I'll have the conditioning and everything, and I'll have everything with that believe was holding me back. You know, I don't think I'm going to have the massive weight cut, so I'm going to allow myself to kind of open up and push the pace a little bit more. And I think that hopefully, is kind of one of the main, you know, I would think that was the fight that kind of made me finally decide that, hey, you know what, let's go to middleweight.
I see you there. You know, I talked to Joe Daddy Stevenson the other day, by the way. He said to tell you what's up. And, you know, we kind of talked about that issue, you know, and the sport in general. We were talking about certain aspects because I did a live feed with Linton Vassell, you know, who had been making a massive weight cut down to 205. And now he ultimately decided, you know, heavyweight is where he needs to be. You know, do you feel that with you not having this weight cut that you're going to be, you know, more of a devastating factor now? Because, you know, as Linton said, you know, when I interviewed him, he was like, man, now I can eat whatever I want. But I know Zach Cummings ain't going to eat whatever he wants. But, you know, do you feel that you're going to make more of a difference in that aspect of middleweight than you have in the previous fights?
I mean, I think I definitely have a lot of potential to. I mean, let's not get it twisted. I'm still going to have to cut weight.
Yeah,
I'm just only going to have to cut, you know, what normal people cut and not cut what freaking stupid, ridiculous amounts that I used to. So, I mean, I'll still have to cut weight. I'm still, we'll definitely have to attack that, but it's not going to be the amount that I was before and stuff. So, I mean, I still have to stay healthy and make good decisions. I can't go out and eat whatever I want. Yeah, you know, I put weight on instantly, and I'm a fit kid, so it's just kind of how it is. But I do think that, you know, if I do everything right, if I do everything like I did and treat it like I go whenever I cut down to 170, you know, I basically diet down and cut everything, and by the time my water loads up, like, I get close to 186, you know, before I do a drastic another 15 to, you know, 18 pounds to make 70. So, I think I can just do the same thing and get down to that weight without having to do the massive dehydration and stuff. I might just have to, you know, dehydrate just a little bit. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think that, you know, I've always kind of been that big, powerful 170-pounder, and you know, I don't, even when I fight 85, I never really got bullied around with power and stuff, and someone being a lot stronger than me. But honestly, the thing that I think bothers me the most at welterweight is speed. So if I have someone that, you know, stands in front of me, that's fine. But, you know, the couple of guys that have given me a hard time are the ones that are a lot faster than me and stuff. So I think that me going to middleweight, that's actually giving me the benefit. You know, I've been watching some of these guys, and I think I'm going to have a lot more of the hand speed and movement than most of these guys. And I'm not going to go in with that mindset of I'm going to stand right in front of you and take your head off. I think I'm going to go in there and try to be – I'm going to have to set the shots up and be the faster, more technical guy. And it's going to, I think, bring out the best, you know, fighter that I can be.
Yeah, I think so. You know, you're probably going to get mad at me for saying this. I'll run from you when I shoot at the gym. But, you know, even if you were to go to light heavyweight, you would still have to make a cut. You know, what in the thought of Zach Cummings has you wanting to make that cut? Why don't you define yourself or try to establish yourself in a weight class that's more, you know, closest to your weight?
I mean, you know, whenever I'm in – an athlete, when I'm in fight camp and I am, you know, training multiple times a day and stuff like that, I naturally walk around, you know, I automatically drop down close to 200. So I'm not quite big enough to fight light heavyweight, and compete with, you know, those guys at the, you know, the best in the world. I mean, I'm, can I step into light heavyweight and hold my own? Yeah, I definitely think I could, you know, but is it smart for me to give up, you know, multiple inches and reach and stuff from these big guys and do all that whenever, I mean, 185 is not, I have to cut weight, but it's not a bad cut. It's if I could almost diet down to that if everything goes right during my camp and stuff. So I think, you know, 185 is a much smarter decision. And I mean, could I step up and fight at light heavyweight? Yeah, I could, but I'm definitely going to be giving up a lot of size at that point.
I don't think you'll give up size. You're a pretty big boy. You just, I think you found your niche and you're happy with it. And you know, I love your fighting style. You know, it's a forward fight style. You don't back down. And that's one of the things, even if you weren't my brother in life, I would admire about you is you're one of the fighters that comes forward. You're one of the fighters that initiates the game. You know, at what point, you know, I know you're from the Springfield Fight Club, but at what point did that transitional aspect of, you know, the intent of always coming forward, the intent of not backing up or giving the other fighter the edge, at what point was it instilled in the fighting style of Zach Cummings? Because you don't back up.
I don't really know. I guess since day one. You know, just one of those where, I mean, in my mindset, if you're waiting, and I was kind of, I guess from wrestling, you know, the years of wrestling, if you're just kind of like sitting back and waiting for what they're going to do, then you're always on the defensive, you're always waiting and that stuff. So, and, you know, in my mindset, I don't care what you plan on doing, what you're wanting to do, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to force my will and I'm going to set my game plan in motion. So that's kind of, I mean, you know, I'll back up and counter some, but for the most part, I'm trying to cut angles, move forward, stalk people down, and just keep them on the defensive for the most part. And whenever I'm going forward and in my game, I'm a very, very dangerous fighter.
You most definitely are. You know, two of your brothers in the sport fought this last weekend and both had victories, you know, one being Michael Johnson, the other being James Krause. How much of an itch does it put back in the heart of Zach Cummings wanting to get another outing on his plate?
I mean, absolutely. You know, anytime I go to Event Live, you know, it kind of re-energizes everything, and then especially whenever I watch some of my best friends, my brothers fight. You know, it was Krause looked probably the best he's ever looked that I've ever seen him. That was phenomenal performance. Went out. Established his jab, established his range very, very early, you know, hit that nasty knee. That. And then Michael had a super tough fight. It was really close. He had to fight some chokes off and stuff, but, you know, he definitely had the numbers and the striking. So seeing those guys fight, man, it definitely makes me want to make sure I kind of get back into it and get something. I mean, I've been begging for a fight ever since my last one, but I'm just waiting for them to make the call and let me know whenever I'm set up. But I definitely think that kind of revived everything and re-energized the little drive that I have that I need to get back into it.
Yeah, I think so too, man. It was a tremendous, you know, when I saw Michael in the rear naked choke, I didn't see him tapping, so, you know, it was tremendous that he was able to get out of that, because I know you guys are brothers from days of early, and so, I mean, that had to be a tremendous feeling for you, and I knew it would get that itch going. You know, when you do get that opportunity, how much would it mean to Zach Cummings for it to finally be in the United States? I mean, you look at most of your fights, they're all out of the United States. What would it mean? I know your mom likes it because she gets to go on trips, but how much more would it mean to you to have a fight on American soil?
I honestly don't care at all. I really don't. It would be, I mean, sometimes it's kind of nice, I guess, just because it's, I guess I shouldn't say that. So now with the baby, and, you know, having my daughter and all that stuff, like, I guess it is a little simpler to stay in the States to travel and, you know, don't have to worry about massive time changes and all that. So I have to leave, you know, if it's a big time change over in Europe, you know, I try to go out earlier and all that stuff. So that would pretty much just be the only other thing, you know, just, it's a little simpler to travel and stay in the States. But besides that, I mean, I love traveling. I love visiting, you know, new places, new cultures and all that. So, once I'm in the cage, like it doesn't change. The cage is the same. The first couple rows look the same. It doesn't matter what city, state, country, you know, that I'm in. So it doesn't bother me that much, honestly, but I guess it would just might simplify things a little bit more, I guess, if I was in the States, and maybe some friends and family could visit, you know, a little bit more, can travel and come watch it. But yeah, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. Now I get to see a side of you that a lot of people don't, you know. I get to see you with your daughter and how much that, and your wife, and how much that aspect means to you in life. You know, how much more does it instill that process of being a warrior, knowing now that, you know, you do have a family to take care of? And how much growth has Zach Cummings ascertained in the last year in being a father?
Man, it made me realize that every bit of toughness I thought I had, I don't have any of that stuff anymore. I don't know.
Right?
I mean, it's a good thing that I don't, my fight style isn't on that, oh, I'm big, bad, and tough. You know, I go in there and I'm super technical on stuff, but, it's been a huge change in life, and, I think it gives me a reason and a little more sense of responsibility to kind of set up a solid future for when I am done fighting. You know, I feel like a lot of guys in this sport, you know, all they care about is being a world champion and, you know, winning the next fight and just training and training and training. And whenever their time comes to be done with the sport, a lot of times they don't have anything to fall back on. They don't have a plan B. They have no idea what's going on. So, I mean, I've kind of already had that mindset beforehand, but I think having her and having a little more of that responsibility just kind of makes me be a little bit smarter with, you know, what am I going to do with this fight money? You know, am I going to add it to, you know, try to get another business? Am I going to do this? Am I going to invest it? You know, it's just making me be a little more smart with just kind of set myself up for whenever I do decide to walk away from the sport.
Well, with that being said, you know, when you look at it in that aspect, how would Zach Cummings like to be looked at or perceived when it's all said and done, when you do have that time away from the sport?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess the fans and stuff to just kind of, whenever they know me fighting, they know someone's going to step in. That's a tough fight for anybody in the world. And, you know, I come in and try to finish fights. I don't try to win point sparring games and stuff and try to just win decisions. I hate going to judges. I go in there and I try to finish fights, and I try to be, you know, as exciting as I can be as I do that. But for the most part also, I mean, I want people to kind of think of me if I'm real. You know, I'm a real guy. I don't create a character and just have all this big over-the-top nonsense and stuff just to be remembered. I go in there and you know, I try to be myself and just go in there and put on a show for everybody. And that's about all there is to it. You know, I don't have a whole lot extra on top of that. I just try to be myself, be a good leader and a good role model for everybody that's watching. You know, I don't want to put on a character and stuff and then, you know, whatever, years later, have my daughter see videos and stuff and start questioning. Like, I would never want to see that. So basically my personality is to put it out there to where if a kid watches me and stuff, that's, they're like, man, that's the type of person I want to be. You know, I want to go out there. It's, they're putting it all on the line, but they're also doing things to try to better other people's lives too.
And see, that's what I love about you, and that's why I've been a fan of yours since day one. But and when you look at it in the sports aspect of it, would you say it's a double-edged sword? Would you say that you being the humble gladiator that you are, and the man that really doesn't care about things in that aspect, would you say that in years earlier till now that in some aspects has kept you from getting them top 15, top 10 fights, being that you are humble as you are?
It could be a part of it. You know, it could be I could have opened myself up a lot more and done some different things. But I don't really look back. I don't really care. And I was pretty happy with a lot of decisions I've made. And, you know, I might have done that. But what if I create this character and then I just get so lost in trying to do all this stuff that, you know, I don't put the training in that I needed to do. And, you know, and I lost more fights than I won. So I don't know. Yeah, I really don't care about it. You know, I mean, I could think about it, but I mean, you can go back and rethink your whole life and, you know, in any job that you do. So you just got to continue to learn and move forward. And I guess just be happy with the decisions and learn from the decisions that you made. So yeah, I'm not really going to go back and think about it and try to make it, if I can make a change or not, I don't really care.
I kind of want to take a step back in time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, I think it was a moment that really defined who you are in the cage in the sport. You know, I'm going to take you all the way back to 2010, and that was your fight with Dennis Reed. You know, to me, that was a pivotal moment for you moving forward. It showed you that you had ability to go in there with the best in the world. You had what it took to be a cage fighter and make this part of your living. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I don't think I had that kind of mindset until I beat Ian Cabral the second fight of the UFC. But, he definitely was one of them. You know, that guy had over 100 fights, you know, fought multiple world champions. You know, he's one of those that had so many fights and so many different opponents to where he kind of knew and stuff. So it was a pretty cool little moment at the, so I took him down and I had a pretty gangster submission on him, not going to lie. But, after the fight, we were talking a little bit. He came up. He was like, I forgot. He's had well over 100 fights. And he was like, man, you're the first person to ever take me down. And I'm like, okay, this guy fought Rashad Evans. Like, come on now. You know, but he was a national champion wrestler. You know, he's just a little bit older. But, you know, he fought Rashad Evans. He fought Rich Franklin. He fought multiple other just top-name guys, you know. And, he lost him, but he still stepped in and fought these guys. So, you know, he came up to me. He was like, man, like, you know, I fought the best of the best. And I know when someone has it, and I know when people don't. He goes, and you have it. You will make it big, I promise you. And I was like, well, that's... I mean, yeah, it was a very respectful thing for him to say and stuff, and it was pretty cool. So I guess, yeah, there was, some type of meaning to that fight, you know, and then the Terry Martin fight, I think, was a big one and everything, just because, you know, fighting someone who did fight in the UFC and all that type of stuff. So I think I've had a few moments in my career that have always kind of clicked and helped push forward, I guess, in my career.
Yeah, you know, it's been a tremendous career. You know, I look back at all of them, and I see the same guy that stepped into the sport that, you know, in the early days, and you're still the same guy today. And you transition those thoughts and that mentality to the people at Glory MMA and Fitness Northland. What is it like for Zach Cummings to get that opportunity to share not just your knowledge of the fight game, but gain that aspect of respect and humility and a brotherhood in the training of your students?
I mean, I love coaching. It's been something I've been very, very fortunate that I have in my life and stuff. So, I mean, I've been in sports my whole life. And for as long as I can remember, every team I was on, every sport I was in, like, I've always been one of the leaders. And I don't know why, I just kind of I always joke around saying I was a natural born leader. I mean, when it comes down to it, I really don't believe that you're a born leader or not. But I just don't know. I guess in my upbringing, you know, I established those skills very, very early in life. And I don't know. I feel like I'm a pretty strong leader of a person. And I guess I just love sharing my mindset, my mentality, you know, everything there. So, I mean, I have a great group up at the gym, and, you know, I learn from them as well. But as much as I can, I try to help and motivate and inspire all of them as much as I can. But, yeah, it's a really cool thing just to kind of know that whenever I do step away from being an athlete in this sport, that I've got all these guys and these kids and everything coming up and allowing me to be, you know, a part in the journey too. So, I love it. I'm very, very happy, and I'm very lucky that I've got the culture at the gym. I mean, you know, I guess I've had a pretty big part in building that culture, but I can't take full responsibility of it. I think the right people stepped in and stayed, and they all have kind of like-minded mindset that I have, and it's been a really cool part to see.
Yeah, one of my little favorites is old Brian. Little Brian Harris, that's one of my little buddies out there. But, you know, I never really looked at it in this aspect. You know, I interview so many fighters, and they talk about, oh, I had to bring this fighter to emulate, you know, that person that I'm getting ready to face. But in reality, the people that you're training are ultimately the same people that you spar and teach, you know. And so you pick up different retrospects and aspects of them. Would you say that's allowed you as a fighter to actually, in some ways, helped you gain some knowledge from some of your students moving forward in your career? Because you do get to see different fighters in all aspects and different variables.
Yes and no. I mean, with you know, my guys, I mean, obviously, you know, they're bringing stuff that I teach them. You know, they all try to build their own game too, so. It's actually kind of cool that if someone throws a combination and lands something on me, I'm like, you know, where'd you learn that? And then I realize that, you know, I taught it to them. I'm like, oh, I guess it does work. But, I mean, you know, they're also trying to learn on their own and create their own game. So, I mean, you know, I definitely use them for my training partners, you know, and then also going down to the Lee Summit gym. And since I'm not there all that often, whenever I see those guys, you know, I don't know exactly what to expect all the time, which is nice. You know, and then getting the guys up in Denver at Factory X. So, I mean, I get a bunch of different training partners, you know, from all over the place and stuff. But for the most part, you know, it's my guys up there and all that. But, I mean, for the most part, I don't – and it might be a negative thing, I guess, and I look at it positive. So some of these guys, like, oh, I'm bringing this person in to you know, to really kind of emulate someone else. Kind of how I was talking about the whole going forward thing, you know, I really don't care what you plan on coming and doing to me. You know, I focus on my game plan and all that type of stuff and whatever I want to do. So I just keep worrying about bettering myself and not just so worried on, you know, what the other person has to offer. Now, I mean, I believe whenever you're getting up there, you know, in those really, really high profile fights, you know, maybe it might be nice to have someone that's similar and stuff. And, I mean, I think a lot of my teammates will try to do that. I mean, I guess I do it to a certain point. But for the most part, I just focus on myself and make myself the best I can and not worry about what the other person's going to offer and bring to the table.
Yeah, I hear you there, brother. What opportunity, if you were able to name an opportunity that you would like to happen next for you, what would that opportunity be? Who would you like to face next in the UFC octagon?
And honestly, I really don't care. I was kind of trying to find people that were open. I mean, and normally the way the UFC works, I don't ever really like calling anybody out coming off of a loss, but the way the UFC works is if your last fight was a loss, they normally pair you up with another person that took a loss. So they very rarely do like a win-loss type thing. They'll either, if you win, they put someone that won, or if you lost, they put someone that lost. So that being said, I'm trying to look at the middleweight division, who doesn't have a fight, who's come off a loss, and there's really not a lot to pick from. So a couple of the fans, you know, said they'd like to see me fight Dan Kelly, who I'm actually a big fan of just because he's always the underdog. He's just a tough dude who I feel like is similar to me. And I kind of, I don't know, so I said something about that mainly because I really would love to go to Australia. So I brought up Dan Kelly's name. We kind of had a few little words. And then, man, I read an article. And the article was written about his son. So Dan Kelly's son's been living with a kidney disease and his whole life, and I really don't know how much more time he's got left. So Dan made this whole thing of how, like, he wants to have one more fight, his retirement fight, in his home country, and, you know, and hopefully that his son can walk out with him. I read that, and, like, the whole me being like, oh, I want to, like, you know, let's make this fight, and kind of was talking, like, I messaged him and was like, dude, you know, my dad died from, you know, kidney disease and had a kidney transplant, all that stuff. Like, it hit home. I've got a daughter. I'm a father now. Like, I will do whatever I can to help make that happen. If they need someone to step up to make that fight happen, I'm in. That being said, I'm not going to just sit there and, like, not fight. I mean, I'm still going to fight to win, but I would love that opportunity just so he has that one last little opportunity to walk out with his son and kind of share that moment. So, I mean, I don't know. So I guess if I had to call one out, and I don't know if they can make it happen. I've already talked to Mick about it, and he said it's probably not going to happen. But if it's me or not, I really hope that Dan gets that opportunity because that's, I don't know. Man, after reading that out, the article really kind of hit home to me, and I really, really hope he gets that. You know, if I'm the one that's standing across the cage from him, then great. If not, I honestly just kind of hope he gets that opportunity.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of sad. As you and I both know, your dad was my beer and pizza buddy. But, you know, life moves on, and so did Zach Cummings. You know, you've created a tremendous name for yourself in the sport. You've created a tremendous atmosphere for all these, you know, young and up-and-coming fighters through Glory MMA and fitness, and, you know, with both locations in Kansas City and now with the family aspect. If, you know, Zach, if you had to make a statement to my listeners or just people of the sport about what the sport truly means to Zach Cummings, what would that statement be, bro?
Honestly, it changed my life. It really did. It gave me the opportunity to do something that I absolutely love, and that's compete and just be an athlete and really just because it overtook my life. You know, everything I got to do has been in this sport. So, I've always been a team, you know, football, baseball. I start off wrestling as well, so that's kind of got part of that individual competition type thing, which I fell in love with. Just, you can't blame anybody else but yourself. And the fighting and MMA just kind of allowed me to continue that. And I am a firm believer that whenever you're that way, like, you have to, have, like, extreme ownership. You can't blame everybody else. You can't blame anybody because it's only you in there. I mean, yes, we have a team that we train with, and you've got coaches and all that stuff, but when it comes down to it, it's your responsibility for everything, and you have to take ownership of what happens. So that, the sport has kind of instilled that mindset in me and has kind of made me a much, much better person, you know, in business, at home, and everything. So you can't make excuses for anything. It's all on you. This is your life. And I feel like that this sport has kind of instilled that in me a lot more than most other things. I mean, obviously I get to do what I love to do. You know, my hobby is my profession and stuff. And now, you know, even owning the gym, I get to go in the gym and train every day and share knowledge and hang out with the team and stuff. And I mean, that's my job. So, you know, I can't really have any complaints that I'm not the person that would just want to sit there and sit in an office and, you know, work just a regular day job and then come home. I mean, I'm sure my wife would enjoy me home in the evenings a little bit more, but you know, but I wouldn't be very happy of a person. So I mean, this sport's definitely kind of just allowed me to really love and enjoy my life.
And a tremendous life it is. You know, Zach, I know you've had a busy day and you just got done teaching class and everything, and I'm not going to keep you much longer. I just want to say I'm truly honored that, you know, you continue to come on my show and you continue to allow me to come to the gym and shoot and showcase some of your fighters and let the people in the sport in the Kansas City and surrounding areas know about Glory MMA and fitness. And I think what you've done is tremendous, brother. You know, I look back at the first day we met, and, you know, you've been nothing but a gentleman and a brother since. You know, I wish you the best of luck in the sport. I hope you get that fight with Kelly or any other opportunity, as you truly are a deserving aspect. And you truly have fought to get where you're at, where I've seen some fighters of the sport, you know, just get things handed to them. You truly had to have, you know, yourself had to fight tooth and nail to get where you're at.
Oh, yeah.
It's truly humbling to see you maintain the attitude and the rapport that you have. You know, brother, it truly was, you know, an honor for me to have you on tonight. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. Any sponsors, any friends or family, or any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program before I let you go, the floor is yours, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you know, thanks for having me on. Again, I love what, you know, you keep putting on a nice platform for fighters. Kind of, we get to know more of the fighter, not just ask the same three questions, you know, when's your next fight, how's your camp going, whatever it is. So, you know, that's respect to you for that. And then, I mean, social media, you know, I'm on Facebook, Zach Cummings, at Zach Cummings for Instagram, where I post most of my stuff, and I share it to the other things. So, like I always say, if you got any questions, message me. I do whatever I can to try to answer everybody. Sometimes it might take me a little bit, but you know, I try to get back to everybody and answer any questions that I get from fans. So, yep, as Zach Cummings on Instagram and Facebook, Zach Cummings _ MMA on Snapchat. Don't really post as much on there, but I don't know. Follow me and hopefully build up some new fans. Whenever I get back in there, I'll show you why you should be a fan.
You should be a fan anyway, you know, to my listeners, you should be a fan anyway. You know what, Zach, you know, I wouldn't even, you talk about this platform, I wouldn't even have this platform, I wouldn't even have this aspect of my life if it wasn't for you. You know, lately I've been getting some of the fighters from the early days of the UFC, from the beginning to UFC 8, a lot of them have been coming on my show and calling it the greatest show they've ever been on or their best interview. But you know what? None of that would have been possible if it wasn't for you. You know, you pulled me out of retirement. You forced this on me, man. But, you know, I look back at that opportunity that you gave me. And thank you for blessing my life. You know, you gave me a second opportunity in the sport. And that's something I'll never overlook. And on that note, I just want to tell you thank you. I hope you get the fight that you deserve. And the best of luck to you, brother. And I'll see you the next time I come up with Glory and shoot. Thank you for joining
right,
the show,
sounds
bro.
Good. Sounds good.
All right. God bless you, right, man. And yeah, give the baby a hug and kiss for me. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Zach Cummings. Truly, he's humble, more humble than he let on there. He's a lot more humble in life. If you know him, he's a goofball. We, you know, we like to call him Papa Smurf. We like to joke around with him, but he truly is a tremendous man in his walk. He gave me an opportunity when I had walked away from the sport to come back to the sport. So if anybody wants to thank me for anything that I've done, go back to the beginning of Zach Cummings' career and when I came back out of retirement, and some of my best work came after that. This show wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for Zach Cummings pulling me out of retirement. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. Cut Man for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez. And last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, one of the best mouth guards in the business. Getting a little worked up. On that note, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining the show. I want to take us out with a little bit of my homie from the 916. Have a good night, and God bless.
With another one, Sacramento summer one, golden on the beat, shit slapping, yeah, another one, Cali, this the number one, Bay, this the dummy one, Cash can't rap, knee slapping, yeah, funny one, rapping rappers up there.